Hello, everyone, and welcome. So this is a live recording of the Women in Analytics After Hours podcast. We have a wonderful guest here with us today. But WI After Hours is the podcast where we hang out and learn with the WI community. Today, we are going to be talking about how a community information exchange aligns data to enable action. And so I would love to welcome to the podcast here in person with us today, Diane Dagaford. Diane is the founder and principal consultant of Arenda Advisory, and she's currently serving as an executive advisor at Smart Columbus for their Community Information Exchange Initiative. Formerly, she was the chief technical officer at The Ohio State University. She also served as the interim VP and chief information officer for 1 year during COVID. She was responsible for most of their core infrastructure, and she led the university's central data lake and data warehouse, data governance, and data risk initiatives. She also provided faculty there with secure data environments for research. So welcome to the podcast, Diane. And is there anything else you would like to share with us today?
That's great, Lauren. Thank you so much. Happy to be here. Also an author. So you might see in the bio, I wrote a book in 2018 on managing elder care. How many of you, show of hands, are dealing with aging parents? So check out that book, especially if your aging parents live somewhere else. Great to be here.
Amazing. And so to get into our topic today, can you tell us a little more about your work with Smart Columbus?
I'd be happy to. So as an executive advisor, technical advisor with Smart Columbus, I'm helping them with this project, this initiative called the Community Information Exchange. So go back to COVID, 2020, 2021. A group of nonprofit leaders came together as the Economic Mobility Coalition. And they said, you know, we're getting hit hard by COVID. So think about this. Mid-Ohio Food Collective, even in 2021, saw 250,000 new customers, new clients at the food pantries that had never been at a food pantry before during COVID. 250,000, 250,000 people visiting a pantry for the first time. And across the social services sector, all organizations were just getting inundated with significant increases in needs for assistance. And at the same time, this is a sector that is, you know, not very digitally ready, generally speaking. Some organizations are, but most weren't. So they said, okay, there's got to be a better way. So this coalition brought together Mid-Ohio Food Collective, YWCA, Seamer Institute, the Columbus Urban League, Impact Community Action, and several other organizations. And they said, all right, what are we going to do here? We have some goals. So the first goal was, we need to make it much easier for residents to find their way to programs and services that are available to help. It's a maze. It's really hard to find your way unless you know somebody who is a good guide, who can be a navigator. Second, we need to make it easier for caseworkers at community organizations to be able to coordinate help on behalf of a resident. So if you think about it, a resident who's getting, you know, help, let's say food stamps, they call it SNAP. If I'm getting food stamps, I probably also need help with transportation or job training or childcare. Well, those are provided by totally separate organizations that, you know, have totally siloed systems and don't, you know, coordinate with each other through email and phone. So we need a way to make it easier to coordinate across systems, to coordinate care on behalf of a resident. And then the third thing is, you know, the city, the county, the funders wanted more visibility into what's working, what's not, so that, you know, they could target investments a little bit better. So the coalition did a national scan, and they realized there were communities across the country implementing these things called community information exchanges. Let's go learn about them. They did. They said, okay, that's what we need to do here in our region. So late 21, early 22, City of Columbus, Franklin County agreed to fund the development of a Community Information Exchange, or CIE, for our region. And they asked Smart Columbus and Rise Together Innovation Institute to co-lead the initiative, and they housed it within Smart Columbus. And then I was brought in at the end of 22 to help get this initiative launched.
That's amazing. And so just because it's a new definition, I think for a lot of folks in the audience, maybe you've heard of it before, but overall, even across the nation, this is still a very new initiative. So what is a community information exchange at the core, and what are the key elements of that?
Great. So I'll be saying CIE from here on. I like shortcuts.
Yeah,
I really appreciated the acronym slide earlier in the opening talk. That was funny. Okay, so CIE has, think of it as an initiative with two key components. One is change management, changing how social services agencies interact with each other in a couple of areas. That's number one. And then number two is, think of it as a community portal. So the change management piece, we're talking about how social service agencies share data with each other, how they refer residents to each other. So again, if I'm at Mid-Ohio Food Collective Food Bank, someone comes in, I realize, you know, they need help more than just food. I can refer them to Goodwill for job training programs, or I can refer them to Impact Community Action for, let's say, rent payment assistance or utility payment assistance. So referrals. And then number three, how they coordinate help. So that's the change side. On the community portal side, think of it as a software as a service platform with mobile and web interfaces, a big data hub, plus advanced analytics and AI powering certain kinds of things. Kind of like MyChart for human services, or kind of like Expedia for human services. Think of it as like if MyChart and Expedia had a baby and focused on human services. That's kind of like what a CIE is. So there are two main users: residents who need services and caseworkers in those social service agencies who are helping them. What do they use it for? Well, they use it to connect residents with services faster. Again, it's a maze for residents. It's really hard to find your way and know what's out there, what's possible. And there are websites that they can go to. You can do a Google search, you know, and I need help paying my electric bill. You'll see all kinds of things that come up. But the challenge is there's all this sort of if-then-else logic you have to go through to see, do I qualify? And that's what makes it so difficult, like a maze. So connect residents with services and then help those caseworkers with a like 360-degree customer view. Any of you have probably worked on customer database initiatives before, right? Raise your hand if you've done a 360-degree customer. Yeah. So it's something like that. But the idea there is the individual's journey to economic stability, because it's sort of a relay race. There are agencies that focus on crisis response. I've just lost my housing. I'm now housing insecure. Help me get rehoused and stable. And then those are upstream. And then downstream, there are organizations that help with like job training to help a person be able to earn a living at a level that can be sustained. So getting that 360-degree view of a journey, see where the individual is, and be able to coordinate with each other to help them on their path. And then finally, two kinds of data. So the first kind is data about the residents and the, you know, some basic biographical information about them, the services that they've utilized, and the risk that they have today. Am I currently, you know, housing unstable, or am I housing stable but, you know, economic, like income unstable. And then the second kind of data is information about the services that are available and the eligibility requirements. And here's the holy grail: current capacity levels. So which shelters have a bed open right now? Which daycares have a seat open right now that we can get somebody into instead of having to call? Do you have anybody, you know, do you have any openings, et cetera? That's it.
So with that, I feel like we're seeing some similarities with these social and health agencies, similar benefits to what we see in industry, in every industry, with bringing the data together, making that less siloed, just to give us more visibility, right? And so with that, connecting the data, what are some of the things that you've been able to do to just improve the efficiency and enable faster decisions and help more people?
Well, it's good to understand we're still in the requirements phase. So we haven't rolled it out, but we have started pilots. And one of those pilots is looking at, when we bring data sets together, what kinds of predictive models or forecasts can we do that would help prevent some crisis? So there's that preventing crisis capability that only happens when you bring data from multiple organizations together and, you know, run the kinds of analyses that you all do on a daily basis. Making it faster to get residents into services. Imagine your mindset when you are, let's say, running a marathon versus being chased by a tiger or a lion, right? Your mindset's very different. So when people are experiencing crisis, they're struggling to think clearly and, you know, logically and rationally about what's my next step, what's my path. So the idea here is bring that information to them, make it faster, easier for them to find the resources that they need to get back on their feet. And then fueling the community insights and action, that's another key benefit from this. Right now, the county, the city, corporate foundations, government programs, all these funders are, you know, investing in our community and these services with anecdotal stories about impact, but no real easy way to pull the data together to be able to understand what's working the best and where do we need to continue to invest or how might we need to restructure some programs. It's not about haves or have-nots, you know, with nonprofits competing against each other. That's not the point. The point is, how do we fund and invest across the sector well and in a coordinated way to help folks get the services that they need?
Absolutely. And bringing not only the data, but the people and the decisions together likely enables greater impact while also enabling efficiency and likely minimizing the amount of resources to do the maximum amount of good. So do you have any examples of the impact of CIEs, I'll use the acronym, that you've seen?
I do. So let me start with a study. So we've seen impact with CIEs in other communities. Again, we're still in the build phase here in the greater Columbus area. But San Diego has had a CIE around since 2011. Rochester, New York is a great example. It's one of our more aspirational models for our local community. They've been in place since the pandemic. And what we're seeing, and also LA. So what we're seeing in these other communities is they're able to use data brought together to predict things like homelessness. In LA, for example, they've got data coming in from county systems and also nonprofits in the area. They've got probably 15 different agencies providing data to work, and they're working with, you know, a group based in Chicago and a group there locally to come up with a predictive model. Who are the people who are at risk that if the county could reach out and give them cash assistance, they know that it will prevent them from becoming first-time homeless. They've tested the model enough that now they have it in practice. So each week, county caseworkers in Los Angeles get a list of individuals who are at the highest risk. They reach out to them and they say, you know, let's talk about some cash assistance to help you. And actually, nobody believes them. Like, they think it's a scam and they hang up. So like, they're having a heck of a time reaching people and go, no, really, seriously, I'm from the county. I have cash to help you. So, you know, that's a sort of interesting side effect, right? But that's actually working. And they are starting to make a small dent in the new first-time homeless cases. Cincinnati just released an announcement that they're doing a similar thing. And in Columbus, the data sets that we've brought together so far from a research perspective through our pilots, we're seeing the same kind of, let's call it patterns in the data that the LA study found and that the folks in Cincinnati found. So we believe we can implement such a model here too. So that's just one of the key benefits and impacts that we can have using the CIE.
That's amazing. It's so exciting to hear that there are examples of cases where this has already been making an impact. And I know in Columbus, we are a little bit earlier in the journey, but can you tell us with that, on that journey, where you're at right now and what you've been able to do so far?
Sure. So where we are now, so Initiative got funded in early 2022. In late 2022, when I came on board, we did good old objectives and key results. Anybody out there use OKRs in their organization? Show of hands. All right. It's an oldie but a goodie. No, it was a really valuable exercise to bring, you know, 30 leaders of community organizations and get them to agree on, well, what does done look like? That's awfully difficult, right? As data scientists, that's a big challenge. So, and we used actually a really effective model for getting their buy-in. So when we came up with our draft, you know, we did several workshops. When we came up with our draft OKRs, we didn't ask people to vote yes or no. We asked them to say, all in, full on, yes. I can support it. You know, I have doubts, but I can probably get there. Or I can't support it, but I won't block it. Those were the four choices that we gave them on their response. And that really helped. It helped us understand where we were on target with those OKRs and where we were slightly off base and why. Because we asked after every question, and why do you feel that way? That was extremely effective. So anyway, we did the OKRs in 2022. 2023, 2024 has been about getting the legal structures in place, the data sharing agreements, the governance for the initiative, the funding together, you know, all that stuff. When you work in the public sector, you understand what that looks like. And then we started on pilots. And those pilots are helping us to prove out the concepts that we have, this theory of change model that we have for our region, and demonstrate to ourselves that we can actually do it, like the predictive modeling that I was telling you about earlier. So right now we are doing pilots and prototypes, and that will inform an RFP that will go out towards the end of this calendar year. In 2025, 2026, we will build and configure, and then we will release towards the end of 2026 with some key nonprofits already utilizing the platform and already have gone through the change management within their organizations. And then in 2027, onboard other groups. One key thing I wanted to bring up is that as we're developing this, we're doing it together with residents. So oftentimes, you know, when you go down the road of some kind of software development project or platform development project, you have focus groups, right? You come up with user personas. We felt it was more important to actually bring end users to the design table with us as co-designers. So we hired a group of 26 people that are working with us, 13 residents and 13 caseworkers, residents who are currently receiving benefits and caseworkers who are currently, you know, helping residents, not as official representatives of their organizations, you know, because we want their honest, candid feedback. And they are with us figuring out what done looks like, and helping us with journey maps. And as we now shift into prototyping, we'll be helping us with those prototypes. So with residents and caseworkers, by residents and caseworkers, for residents and caseworkers. And it's been, I think, a key to our success. We went to a national conference recently. There's a CIE summit that happens every year in San Diego. So if you're interested in this world and want to get a bird's eye view, go to that conference next year. But we realized, you know, lessons learned that we heard from other folks, we're definitely on the right track for our community here. And with what we can do now with AI and generative AI, we feel like we can actually even leapfrog what has been done in some of the other organizations and bring some new kinds of capabilities back to the CIE world.
That's so exciting to hear. So is this a standard approach for CIEs to bring users to the table to keep that human in the loop? Or is this something that you and Smart Columbus have really set off on a new trajectory to include?
I think yes and no. So CIEs around the country understand the need to talk with end users. But I feel like we're taking it a step further by, you know, employing them as co-designers and co-developers with us to really understand at a deep level what's that journey look like and how can we fix the really subtle problems that are the pivotal points. Here's an example. If I am transitioning housing, let's say I have a job that just pays the bills, I'm paycheck to paycheck, and I get laid off, and I have maybe just enough savings to pay my rent for one more month. But I realize if I don't get a job in time, I'm going to get evicted for non-payment of rent. And in the climate we have today with landlords, you know, there's not a lot of grace. It's you're out. So, okay, if I can't pay my rent, I may need to be sheltered somewhere, either with a friend. If I don't have a friend, then go to a shelter, you know, get some assistance until I can get housed again, get a job again. What do I do with my stuff? So some agencies will pay for a storage facility, you know, if I needed to put my stuff in storage somewhere. But that's not an official service that they list, right? So when you go to like the 211 website and do a search, where do I put my stuff? No agency will come up, right? It's something that's subtle. So we're teasing out these subtleties of unofficial, non-published services that are really critical and working through with the agencies and the residents. Okay, so how do we make this stuff more visible and make it easier for people to get to it?
That's so interesting. So you are really intentionally bringing in the end users, and that's helping you identify those gaps for maybe even new services that could help people, could minimize the overall resource allocation and help people get help faster.
That's right. And that's a really good point. You know, having the data together across the region helps us identify where are those big gaps and where do we need to target funding. One of the things Smart Columbus is working on, you know, a sister project, if you will, is the Digital Equity Coalition and getting folks devices, connectivity, and skills to be able to utilize, you know, be connected. That's a big part of this.
That's awesome. That's incredible work you're doing, honestly. And so I know this is a partnership, really, with you and Smart Columbus and the members, the residents of the community. But I know it's also a partnership with the local community, some of the people who have the skills, have the perspective that help you make the most impact of this. So can you talk a little more about how you're engaging with the local community in these efforts?
Happy to. So first of all, there's multiple kinds of communities. So first is the community of the social services sector, if you will. So Smart Columbus and Rise Together Innovation Institute do a lot to engage with as many community members as we can, community organizations, to be involved. So we have a product development council, if you will, that has, I think, 35 now organizations as members, and all of them will participate in pilots and help build out this platform together. But beyond that, we're reaching out to the technical community, and my invitation to all of you in the data community to participate as thought leaders. We have a technical advisor program where folks come in. We have like half-day workshops where we sit down and we bring to the, you know, technical experts in the community problems that we're struggling with, like how do you create that golden record of an individual cobbled together out of sources that are all imperfect, when there's no clear like source of truth. How do you do that? Well, that's been solved in lots of other industries. So let's bring technical experts together who've already tackled those problems and inform how we can approach it here. So we've got the technical advisor program. And what I would recommend, and we'll put this in the show notes, is if you're interested in getting involved as a thought partner in one of these technical advisor sessions, sign up for our newsletter. That way we've got you on the mailing list, and reach out to me on LinkedIn and I'll make sure that you're connected as we move forward and start looking at ways that we can leverage AI, as a matter of fact.
Absolutely. And this is a not so subtle call for volunteers. We know we have a lot of very, very smart and incredible people in the audience that have all sorts of technical skills that would really benefit your community. So if you are interested, we do really recommend that you connect with Diane. But as we are kind of closing out, I wanted to ask you a question, Diane, that I ask every single person who comes on the podcast, and that is, what is a resource that has helped you in your career and that you feel would help others who are listening?
I've got two resources for you. All right. The first one, another oldie but a goodie, it's a book. It's called The Elements of Influence, The Art of Getting Others to Follow Your Lead. It was published in 2011. It was written by Terry Bacon. And what I like about that book and why I've recommended it so many times is that it lays out a structure, a framework for influencing. And you all, as you know, data scientists, data practitioners, data managers, you're in a position where you have to influence leaders to be able to, you know, get out of the proof of concept purgatory that we heard about before, right? Influence is a really important skill to have. And what he does, he uses a model called TOPS. So there are influence techniques and skills, that's the T and the S, and then there are sources of power, and there are organizational sources of power and personal sources of power. Techniques and skills, some examples of that would be like building rapport. Are you able to build rapport with people? Or how well do you consult? Asking questions rather than telling, you know? So building up your consulting skill muscle, building up your rapport muscle. Those are important skills that you can do. But then organizational sources of power, that's like the position that you have in the company, your title, or the resources you control. Maybe you control access to a particular information source. So that's an organizational source of power. Personal source of power are things like self-discipline, willpower, things that, you know, are all about yourself, how you manage yourself on a daily basis. When I moved into the vice president and CIO role at Ohio State, I sat down with my assistant every week. We looked at my calendar. I looked at what were some key meetings coming up where I knew I had to influence things, influence the direction of things. And we pulled out TOPS and I thought through, you know, okay, what's going to be my approach for this meeting? What's going to be my approach for that follow-up? So I recommend his book. The second thing is, if you're interested in, you know, this idea of doing well by doing good and bringing your skills to social services, there's an organization, a nonprofit called Code for America. Have you ever heard of Code for America? Anybody here? A couple folks have. Code for America is doing some really great stuff. And they, you know, they deal with mostly with federal programs like SNAP and Medicaid. These are funded federally, but, you know, delivered by at the county level. So it's interesting, you know, they kind of go back and forth between federal, state, local. But I like, you know, the delivery of benefits programs tends to be very program focused. What they are doing is trying to change that and make it more human focused. I mean, the reason there's all this bouncing around from one place to another and all these dead ends that you run into when you're a resident trying to find help is because it's program focused, not human focused. So they put together something that's really cool, a national safety net scorecard. It's vital signs for how well governments are delivering services like SNAP and Medicaid. And we can put a link to that in the show notes. It was really an interesting like set of objectives and key results for making that transition from program-centered to human-centered.
That's so interesting. With the book especially, I think we people in the data analytics AI space, we love a good framework to reference as we are thinking about how we're going to do something. And we will absolutely link those in the show notes. But as we're closing down, Diane, I would love your advice on two things. So you recently went on your own. What are your thoughts on anyone that is interested in going out on their own, starting their own consultant or just business? And what would you recommend?
Well, I'm still learning, so take it for what it's worth. I think the most important thing is figure out, I would say, forget about what you're passionate about. A lot of people say, follow your passion. I disagree with that. Because a business is about, you know, what's your purpose? So is your purpose to make an impact in the world in some way? And what skills do you have and experience do you have that you can bring to that purpose? You know, so for me, the skills and experience that I have, I felt that I could bring to a purpose that guides me, which is, you know, making the world better in my local community, one person at a time, but using the skills that I have to do it. This project is a really great example of that. So figure out your purpose. And maybe an easy way to figure out your purpose is to write down 10 things that are not your purpose and then write the opposite. So figure out, write down 10 things that are just not you, not your purpose going forward, things that you don't want to do in your business, and then write the opposite of it. And in the opposite, see if you can find that nugget that inspires you to say, that's the direction I want to take.
That's awesome. Well, I would love to just thank you again for joining us for this live podcast recording, and as well as thank everyone who joined us today to listen to all of the incredible things Diane is doing in partnership with Spark Columbus and learn a little bit more about all of the different ways that we're able, as technical individuals or as just community members, to impact our greater community and those that live within it. So thank you again so much for joining us, Diane. I really, really appreciated learning more about community information exchanges.
Thank you, Lauren. So happy to be here.